This is the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Joshua Schwiesel, also in studio with me today. As we come back to economics, we're going to discuss economics on this edition of the program because we want to bring every thought captive unto the obedience of Christ, and every aspect of life must be subjected to a biblical way of thinking. And, of course, that's one of the presuppositions we put into America and God's Providence, a 1,000-page, 500-year history of the rise and fall of the American Christian Republic. And I think this is a story worth telling. Now, we don't just focus on politics. We look at the culture of the nation. We look at the education of the nation. We look at the economics of the nation as well. We have numerous economic charts. And so we don't just look at the politics. Politics itself is boring, especially if you're ignoring the ideas and the worldviews that go into the politics of a country. So that's why this history is a little different than the average history book you're going to get. You're going to get a much fuller view of what is going on in the church, what is going on in the culture, what's going on in the economy, what is happening in the schools and the education of the nation, because that's what you really need to be paying attention to. That is what provides the fruits of politics in future generations. So America and God's Providence is a new history book of America available for Christian families in this country and around the world if you want to follow the interesting providential story of the United States of America over a period of 500 years. Well, the story continues, and we are looking at the ongoing downfall of the United States, certainly socially, certainly politically, but now economically as well. Now, America is turning more socialist all the time. The great socialist experiments in the world over the last 100 years haven't turned out very well. Now, the nice thing about the last 100 years is we have had ample opportunity to test out the theories of Karl Marx, and they have proven disastrous. Cuba, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, need I go on?
Now, these stand as monuments forever. They're powerful monuments to the bad ideas lying behind Marx and those who followed him.
It's not the first time, of course, in history China attempted some economic socialist plans way back in, I'm going to say, the 5th or 6th century. And so did the Puritans. And it's always been a failure. It's always been a failure, my friends. The great socialist experiments in the world have proven to be a disaster. And two stories come in front of us simultaneously this morning. The first is the New York Times article. Economists are saying that Venezuela's collapse is the worst in the world outside of major wars which have destroyed nations. And here's the other story. 43% of Americans now favor socialism, up from 36% in 2007, up from 25% in 1942. And so, friends, two things. First, economists are saying Venezuela's collapse is the most spectacular in the world. And 43% of Americans are saying, hey, let's try this.
Yeah, and you really want the 43% to pay some more attention to the first story there.
It would
think
be good
about
if 43% of Americans were reading the New York Times. It shocked for me. It was the New York Times that stepped up and admitted. I guess from time to time, the New York Times tells the truth. But New York Times headlined Venezuela, richest nation in South America, now has collapsed. So that was the headline. And here's the story. Butchers in Venezuela have stopped selling meat cuts in favor of fat shavings and cow hooves, the only animal protein many of their customers can afford. So, not good. Venezuela, not good. Richest nation in South America, all the way down to the poorest nation in South America. And friends, this is pretty much similar to what happened in Cuba, and it is happening in Venezuela now. Venezuela's fall is the single largest economic collapse outside of war in at least 45 years, per the Economist quoted in the New York Times article.
Yeah, not a single invading army had to enter Venezuela. It was just bad ideas put into effect. That
one
took the
big
whole nation
fat idea, one right. Big fat bad idea produced a disaster for the economy in Venezuela, friends. And Hugo Chavez is the one largely responsible for this. He was the president of that country for what, 15, 16, 18 years. Following the adoption of the new constitution in 1999, Chavez focused on enacting social reforms as part of the Bolivarian
revolution using record high oil revenues of the 2000s, his government nationalized key industries, created participatory democratic communal councils, and implemented social programs known as the Bolivarian missions to expand access to food, housing, health care, and education. In 2010, Hugo Chavez proclaimed support for the ideas of the Marxist Leon Trotsky, saying, "When I called him," that is a friend of his, "he said to me, 'President, I want to tell you something before someone tells you I am a Trotskyist.' And I said, 'Well, what is the problem? I am also a Trotskyist. I follow Trotsky's line, that of permanent revolution.'" And then he cited Marx and Lenin. So Hugo Chavez, a well-known Marxist Trotskyist of this century and largely responsible for the destruction of one of the most active and prosperous economies in South America.
Well, it's shocking to see how swift the fall is. I mean, you look at the Soviet Union, at least survived a little bit longer, had a little bit more time to it. But this is 2000 to the present, and we are seeing the complete collapse.
Well, sadly, they don't have anything of the Christian heritage of Europe and America. And I think the lack of this 1,000-year or 1,500-year Christian heritage, the lack of the Protestant work ethic, the lack of the Puritan work ethic, the lack of the heritage that we received from the Reformation of the 16th and 17th century was catastrophic for Venezuela. All they had was a watered-down Roman Catholic worldview. Wasn't enough to sustain a nation, and it folded like a cheap suit when Hugo Chavez introduced socialism to the nation. Be back with more in just a moment on The Generations Broadcast.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith, and it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. And I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent? The American Pilgrims and the Battle for King's Mountain. How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
And we are back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here. Josh Schwieso also in studio with us. We discuss a horrible nightmare in South America, Venezuela, falling down badly after, 15, 20 years of an experiment with socialism or communism as government increasingly controlled so much of Venezuela's means of production and began to supply for the health care needs, the education needs, and every aspect of human society in Venezuela. It was a disaster. Now, there's a difference between what happened there and what happened in the United States. In the United States, we've had a very, very slow introduction to socialism over a period of about 100 years. It's been very slow, very steady. But this revolutionary approach tends to bring these South American nations down hard.
Now, Kevin, when I look at these stories, I think it's so clear, so obvious that these are destructive ideas and we see the destructive effects. But apparently there's others that are just not dissuaded from these ideas here in America. We see the 43% mentioned that favor socialism, but then you have somebody as prominent as Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders, former presidential candidate and maybe a future presidential candidate as well, advocating for socialism. And how does he respond to these kinds of stories about Venezuela?
I think he would point to Scandinavia. They all point to Scandinavia. Scandinavia. But now Scandinavia is somewhat unique in that they don't bring their socialism in by revolutionary means, whereas these dictators have more of an opportunity to bring in a radical form of socialism. They introduce it quickly. And the dry rot comes in extremely fast, and that's how you destroy Zimbabwe and Venezuela. That's how these nations come down. So I think that's part of it. Also, let's face it, the European nations have so much stronger of a Christian heritage, and nations like Norway and Sweden seem to have something of that Protestant work ethic. They certainly were influenced by Martin Luther and the Lutheran Church. And I think that somehow the spiritual revival and reformation of the 16th century had a 500-year influence upon nations. And even as they have worked very hard to apostatize with the indoctrination of Karl Marx and Charles Darwin and all the others, even as they've turned away from the Christian faith, those foundations are 6-8 meters thick. I was in South Korea, and the South Koreans were asking me the same question. They said, well, we're introducing the same dry rot you are. And so what's going to happen to us? I said, well, the only difference between South Korea bringing in all these humanist ideals and the United States of America is that we have more of a Christian heritage. Our Christian foundations were 6 or 7 meters thick. Yours only about a half a meter thick. So it will take a fair amount of dynamite to undermine the thick Christian foundations in the Western world compared to these other nations that are inculcating the same bad ideas. The destruction will come faster for those who are inculcating the bad ideas in Europe, or in Asia and South America and Africa versus those nations that are inculcating the ideas here in the West. So, you know, I warn them of the same bad ideas, the same bad humanism that serves as the dry rot for their socioeconomic systems. We'll see if anybody pays attention. Well, friends, when people point to Scandinavia, I think people need to understand that Norway, Iceland, Ireland, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, they birth implode. So there is birth implosion going on. Don't forget the birth implosion. Don't forget the fact that they destroy their young by abortion and by a generous use of the abortifacient contraceptive pills. So they birth implode. And that really does very, very badly to the worker to retiree ratio, you know, 20, 30 years hence.
Yeah, how are you going to support all those retirees relying upon that government income
We're doing the same thing. Right. 2011 was the banner year for us in which the Social Security Fund went into the red for the first time and 80 million baby boomers started their retirement process and would continue for the
more money to be distributed. And
that's right. So you're looking at the worker to retiree ratio big time imploding thanks to Norway, Iceland, Ireland, Finland, Denmark, and Sweden's use of the birth control pill and their radical feminism and radical sexual revolutions they have inculcated as well. But here's the other point that needs to be made. Norway, Iceland, Ireland, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, they are the most socialist nations in the world and the most expensive nations in the world. They have the highest cost of living in the world. They're in the top, you know, 10, 12. So, you know, you want to go somewhere where it's really, really expensive to live, go to these nations that are massively socialist and birth imploding. Also, it's interesting as we pay attention to America that America has slowly received the ideology of socialism. It seems to me that it's slower than I thought it would be. See, I thought socialism would take up faster, largely because the American universities were so filled with the doctrine of socialism. Socialism was the basic worldview of the American humanist university.
But as you look at this gap between 1942 to the present, we go from 25% in 1942 favoring socialism to 43% in the present. That's a big gap in time.
It took 70 years.
That's many decades.
It took 70 years, friends. 70 years to jackhammer the Puritan work ethic and basic biblical law out from under the American Christian mind, the American evangelical mind, the American mind. It took a very long time. It's really hard to break the back of American Puritanism and American Puritan work ethic.
They apparently still have quite a ways to go if we're at 43%. Still some more chipping away to
be done. Still some chipping away to go. Yeah, it may take another 20 years to bring this about. And socialism has come slowly. You think about education. Education was taken down quickly, but then you move on to health care. And health care, it's been a slow but steady process. Obamacare helped. It jacked up government control of healthcare from some 40% to about 60%. So, you know, it's now government controls the majority of healthcare in America. So America is far more socialist than it was in the 1980s. But it's a slow and steady process. It doesn't come about by five-year revolution at the hands of some radical man like Castro or Lenin or one of these revolutionary socialists. So, yeah, universities have worked very, very hard to destroy the American Christian worldview, especially when it comes to economics. By the way, I think it's important for us to continue to study the American Christian heritage, and that's why we've put together a new book called American Faith. You and I worked on mm-hmm. that for quite some time, 27 beautiful vignettes of American faith. This, I believe, to be one of the best ways to study American history, to get into the lives of the people who really lived and constituted the hard faith, the strong faith of the American Republic over a period of 200 to 300 years. You know, we have inherited one of the most God-blessed, prosperous, free nations on earth. It has been probably the most Christian, the most prosperous nation in the history of the world, and God's hand has been upon this nation. And I think Christian families need to sit back and ask, well, why has God so blessed this nation? And the answer is that we have a faith in the roots of this nation, and it doesn't give way very quickly. We need to give our children this heritage of Christian faith, and that's why we wrote this book, American Faith, 27 vignettes of strong American faith, from Winthrop, from John Winthrop to David Wilkerson. We go through George Washington Carver, John Quincy Adams, George Washington, Samuel Adams, Daniel Boone, Jedediah Smith. Mm-hmm. Chills go up and down my back as I think about the amazing faith of these Americans over the last 300 to 400 years.
It's a really unique book, as history books go, because it is filled with stories. Your children will love working through these incredible stories that demonstrate God's providence and goodness to this nation.
And Josh, of all the books that I have written, I read them out loud to my kids. Their very favorite is American Faith. Yeah. I just finished reading all 600 pages for them, and they will tell you it was their favorite book. So if you want a affirmation and an endorsement, you get it from my kids. And we mm-hmm. also have a great endorsement from George Grant and Douglas Bond for our new book called American Faith, now available at our website, generations.org or kevinswanson.com. Well, one of the questions that comes up is, all right, so Zimbabwe came down. Venezuela, the most prosperous nation in South America, came down. Could it happen here? Could it happen here?
It's an important question for us to reflect on since we live in this nation.
I wrote a poem about this, you know, when I was 18 years old. I still have a copy of it. It could never happen here. Think I'll have another beer. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those poems I wrote. Thinking about these issues, even back in the 1970s and 80s, I was interested in what was going on around the world and what was going on in America with the breakdown of the American social system. And, of course, we're way, way, way down the sewer pipe now, far further down in terms of every possible socioeconomic indice you could imagine. But could it happen here? This is an article from Marvin Alasky, World Magazine. Good man. He's one of the editors for World Magazine. And he's just simply asking the question, could it happen here? He's looking at Venezuela. He's looking at Zimbabwe. He's just asking the question, could it happen here? Venezuela, here we come. That's the subtitle to this article in World Magazine. And he quotes Alan Greenspan, who was one of the Fed chiefs from, I think, the 1980s, appointed by Ronald Reagan. Alan Greenspan said there's zero probability of default for the American federal government. Also, he quotes Donald Trump, who in 2016 said concerning the national debt, this is the United States government. Can never have to default because you just print more money. So, and he is true to his word. Donald Trump is the Keynesian of Keynesians. He is going into mm-hmm. far more debt as a percentage of the GDP and far more higher deficits as a percentage of the GDP than Barack Obama ever dreamed of. So Donald Trump, the man who is spending America into massive debt, he has already said it. This is the United States government. You never have to default because you print the money. And Trump is right, according to Marvin Alasky. Let me quote Marvin Alasky again. Trump is right. Even Zimbabwe and Venezuela never had the default. Their dictators just printed more money. But he says, I have a 10 trillion Zimbabwe dollar banknote that may be worth a penny, or maybe I could trade it in for a similar number of Venezuelan bolivars.
So instead of defaulting, they just move to hyperinflate the currency.
Absolutely. That's how they fix it. And, of course, it's everybody owns American debt that suffers, and that is usually a cause for world wars. So keep that in mind, too. But he points out, this is very interesting. He says, modern monetary theory proponents, there's what he calls MMTs, modern monetary theory proponents say the United States should deliberately inflate the currency as a way to reduce the real value of our national debt and transfer money from creditors to debtors. Many newly elected House Democrats seem to be MMT fans. They hope to control the White House and all of Capitol Hill by 2021. Now, that's revolutionary. See, this is another form of revolution. This is something that the Democrats are good at. This is what socialists and communists are good at. They're good at revolution. They're good at turning nations over and bringing much destruction to a nation. Keep in mind, friends, hyperinflation kicks the whole nation and the whole world into depression and probably into world wars. So keep that in mind, too. So why is socialism so tempting? I want to end on this note. Well, socialism is tempting because people are sinful. And they like to envy others. They like to steal from others. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. I think we forget this from time to time, that man, by nature, is given his sinfulness.
Mm-hmm. And God, who knows us better than we know ourselves, gave us the 10th commandment, you shall not covet.
That's right.
From the very foundation of
the law. And the 8th commandment, you shall not steal.
Yes.
Well, democratic governments are more than happy to steal from the rich and give to the poor, who are taught, don't need to be taught very well because by nature everybody wants to envy everybody else, but they are taught by the socialists to envy. They're encouraged by the socialists to envy.
This is a good way to envy is what they want to present this as.
Yeah.
This is okay.
Yeah.
This is not wrong.
Right. But keep in mind, friends, socialism is dry rot. Okay? Put that on your bumper sticker. Socialism is dry rot. If you want to destroy a nation, use socialism. It will do a good job for you. There's a reason why Cubans drive around in cars made in the 1950s. There's a reason why Zimbabwe is destroyed and Venezuela is, what are they doing, eating cow hooves?
Eating fat shavings.
Fat shavings and cow hooves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, socialism is the reason for that.
It's not exactly a 16-ounce steak dinner, is it?
No, not exactly. No. So, friends, check out the cow hooves. Get used to cow hooves. I guess I want to encourage Americans to start buying a little bit more fat and barbecue up the cow hooves because that's where we're going. Socialism is dry rot. It's just destructive. And of course, Karl Marx admitted himself to be Apollyon. This I have in my book on these great idea men, these great philosophers. The book is called Apostate, the Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. But according to Karl Marx's own professions, he said he was Apollyon. He is the destroyer himself, and his goal was to destroy the world. So Karl Marx admitted to this. As his agenda, socialism is inherently destructive. It is the dynamite that blows up established institutions. Socialism is dry rot. Socialism is what happens to democracies when the character of a nation has been destroyed as well. In the 1920s, of course, Germany was decadent, had been homosexualized, etc. It was the very core of Christian apostasy in the 19th century, and the character of the nation had been pretty much destroyed, and Germany was ripe for socialism, and the National Socialist Party was happy to take over. So just remember, it's the destruction of the character of the nation that eventually brings in socialism, and socialism will do its best to destroy the economy. The millennial generation is somewhat the product of generations of divorce, abortion, selfishness, debt, and all the rest. That's why 51% of them are going for socialism. And, as we mentioned, 43% of the American population, now up from 24% in 1944, going for socialism today. Well, friends, what's the solution to all of this? America is about to reap the whirlwind. Add the embracing of socialism in America to a debt-to-GDP ratio of 300%, a bankrupt social security system, and massive birth implosions, and what do you get? You get massive, abject poverty, hyperinflation, and a collapse of a nation into anarchy. That's what you get, and America will reap the whirlwind. America is somewhat different from Venezuela because America is the largest economy in the world, and when it topples, that's a pretty big domino, and that's going to affect a few other dominoes, too. Well, as Christians, friends, what do? We cannot just reject stealing and the redistribution of the wealth. We must begin to give to the poor and help the poor widows in our churches and sister churches in Mexico and Nepal and elsewhere around the world. True churches, real Christians, must reject welfare. We must reject socialism. We must reject the redistribution of the wealth. We cannot participate in a stealing scheme. So if you reject socialism and you say, we're not going to participate in this massive institutional breaking of the Eighth Commandment, what do we do? Well, let him who steals steal no more.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
But let him work with his hands in order that what?
He may have something to give.
That verse just hopped into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's exactly the verse.
Yes.
Isn't it? That's exactly the verse.
Those who want to steal and those who are stealing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Josh, that only applies to 320 million people in America.
Yes.
That's right. There's an application to a verse.
Mm-hmm.
That only applies to 48 million evangelicals listening to this program, or whoever is listening to this program.
Mm-hmm.
That applies to every one of us. We cannot steal. We must give up on Medicare and Medicaid. We must give up on the redistribution of the wealth. We must give up on the welfare, the food stamps, and all the rest. We can't participate in this. Real churches and true Christians will give up, will refuse to participate in the stealing schemes, and we bring charity back to the local church and the local family. We empower the diaconate, and I'm saying this is not, you know, a can drive on Thanksgiving Day once a year.
It's going to go deeper than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a massive diaconate program that is voluntary and local and relational, in which widows are cared for by the local churches. We need to abandon the stealing programs, the Marxist programs, and we bring the charity back into the church. In Acts chapter 6, the deacons that were introduced to the early church were there for one particular reason, and that was to provide for the widows, the Gentile and the Jew widows.
Mm-hmm.
That were part of the early church in Jerusalem.
They established the diaconate, men full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom who could administer these things and take care of the widows. We find instructions in the pastoral epistles from the Apostle Paul instructing us how we can care for widows as a church.
Well, historically, the church would spend 25% of the church offerings serving the widows. That's in Gregory, that's in Calvin, that's in others. So move 25% of the church offerings into the diaconate to serve the widows. That would be about $100,000 a year for a church of 70 families, and that would be sufficient to care for about 4 widows in the church. So I believe that we have plenty to displace Social Security and all of the other welfare programs in the church. Let's begin to move the widows out from under the Social Security systems, and let's provide for the widows by the churches. And, you know, now would be a good time to do this, because I'm not sure that the Social Security program will be able to afford much but the administration of euthanasia for widows by the year 2045. So now would be a really good time for the church to just, you know, step up. See, again, I'm not saying let's defund all of the welfare programs in Denver and Washington, D.C. I'm just saying let's start doing what we're supposed to do.
We may not be able to initiate all these things yet until all the welfare dries up, but we need to be thinking 30, 40, 50, 60 years ahead as to what the needs will be.
And let's get started taking a few baby steps.
That's right.
You know, how can we take some baby steps today? Help the poor in your church. Be ready to give a minimum of 10% to the church in tithing, and, of course, another 3.3% a year to the poor as a family poor tithe. Now, these are the Old Testament tithes, and, of course, you could give more. You can give more, and I'm guessing that the New Testament church is much more generous than the Old Testament church was. But again, for let's say an $80,000 income, that'd be $8,000 to the church and about $2,500 to the poor on an annual basis. And then the last point I think we should make is, let's not envy the rich. Don't let envy affect your politics Don't try to regulate what rich people do with their money. Don't try to force them to provide certain benefits for the handicapped or what have you. Matthew chapter 20, Jesus speaks about the landowner, and he talks about those that complained against the landowner about their pay. And they complained. They said, these last men have worked only 1 hour, and you made them equal to us, who have borne the burden, the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours, go your way. I wish to give to this last man the same as you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things, or is your eye evil because I am good? Now note, the contract is the basis for the payment. Did we not agree? You notice that? Again, the contract between one person who works and the one who pays is the basis upon which the pay is provided. It's not a minimum wage law. It is a contract made between the one who hires and the one who works. And it is that evil eye that envies the person who made more money per hour worked. It is the evil eye that wants to bring equal pay to everybody and do it by government control. That's the evil eye. That's the envious eye. That's the covetous eye. And Jesus condemns the envious eye in this parable. Friends, Jesus is in favor of the free markets. So don't envy the rich and don't support a system of envy that is so popular today. But the final point that needs to be made is the problem is not the economy, stupid. The problem is nobody's seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. When everybody's worshiping money, debtors are worshiping money, lenders are worshiping money, the government's worshiping money, the conservatives are worshiping money, the liberals are worshiping money, the welfareites are worshiping money, the voters worship the money. The problem is we're not fearing God. We're not worshiping God. And when we're not seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness first, we will not see the blessing follow. The problem is that people are not fearing God, and they will do just about anything for money and for a comfortable lifestyle. When voluntary charity goes away, when pride and the entitlement mentality prevails with the poor, and when men cease to trust God for their blessings, that's the beginning of the ruin of an economy.
History shows us that money is a terrible god. It cannot save, it cannot deliver, and we've seen that repeatedly in these various economic collapses.
And we would encourage our listening audience to read the history of the United States and those values upon which this nation was founded and those valuable lessons that we should be picking up and sharing with our children over the last 400 years of this republic. Get a copy of American God's Providence, the 1,000-page coffee table book that explains the whole history of America. It's about a 10th grade level, and we recommend this for curriculum as well, but also get a copy of American Faith. We wrote it at an 8th grade level, but it is an interesting and engaging survey of 27 great Americans over the last 400 years. You need to understand the life of a country, the faith of a country. Get a copy of our new book that was just released called American Faith. 27 vignettes of American Christian heroes. You get a copy of that at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.